What we're going to be doing today is we're going to actually be focusing on a topic which is just something which I personally have been thinking about a little bit over the last week, 10 days, and that is adjusting sites, which is something which I think we all have to do at times in life. And to me, this is sometime a moment just to start thinking a little bit more carefully about things. And so I'd like to just explore two thoughts, two ideas. One which I was thinking about during the course of this, and one which was just beforehand, but it only really fully developed as we went through this. So I'd like to start off with this idea, with two ideas. The first is I'd just like to start off with is thanking three families who are sponsoring today. First of all, to thank Chevy and Richie Cooperberg, who are here on the call, who are sponsoring today's Shir Le'ilu Nishmas, Chevy's mother, Rachel Basichiel Michal. That is Mrs. Rose Friedman Bruffman. Bezos Hashem, it should be Aliyas Neshama for her. And Chevy and Richie, wonderful to see you. Mitzvah Hashem, it should be a continued chizuk for the entire Mishpacha.
Thank you, Rabbi.
It's and also to thank Paula and Moshe Weinstein, who actually were sponsoring last week, but we didn't meet last week. So we're getting a chance to think this week of Moshe's brother, Mr. Israel Weinstein, Yisrael ben Anshul, Asher Anshul. Who's your side, Moish? When was it? It was this last week. Paula, was this last week? Must have been just around now. Sorry, I was on Friday itself, on Asar HaBetavis itself. Nishmosai Aden. You should have a continued Aliyas Neshama. Thank you for sharing this moment with us. It's just the perfect timing around now. And also to Ruchi and Dr. Yonah Hamlet, I'm very happy, Yonah, you could be on the call this morning. Not all Sundays work out of the schedule. It's a pleasure to have you as you and Ruchi sponsor for both the yahrzeits of your mother, Yonah, Sarah Bas Shmuel, Mrs. Sarah Hamlet, and Ruchi's father, Ephraim Bas Ben Alexander, whose yahrzeit is upcoming this Tuesday. Again, Nishmasayim Aiden, thank you for finding this as a location for the sponsorship and thinking. Let's jump straight in. During the course of this, there was many things to think about, many things to think about. And one of the things was that somebody very kind, somebody very dear, sent me a segula, sent a idea of something to say during the course of this experience. And I'd like to share a little bit about that experience. This particular segula, it seems to be a very unusual segula. Here's what it is. It's a Aramaic formulation, which is written by Rav Shimshon of Astropoli, who put together this fascinating formulation, which is to be said b'shas tzara shebayir, when there's a difficulty in the city, or and more particularly when there's a magefa, when there's a plague around, and to be said in the morning and the evening. And here's the text of it. Now, I'd just like to share just for a moment what the text is. It's in Aramaic. And to, for a moment, appreciate the complexity of it, and then perhaps understand and try to understand a little bit of what's going on. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just to get a sense of the cadence of this formulation. It goes like this. Kad Natalu Yisrael mi Ramses, when Israel traveled or left Ramses, it wasn't clear if they were going to travel to one of these three locations. And instead, the desert, so to speak, commanded or had it that they should travel to Sukkos. When they were at Sukkos, there were four options as to where they could have gone. And the Midbar dictated that they should leave, they should travel to Esam. And this is how it goes. The entire thing is essentially they're at a certain way station, and the question is where to travel next. There's a number of options, and there's a formulation as to where they should travel. And this is the entire section. So you can see it takes up this entire page over here, all the way down until the very, very end, where it says, Umehare ha'avorim netalul arvois Moav, until the very end when they get to arvois Moav. So this is the segula, very strange. What does it mean? It's interesting, there are different formulations as to the wording of this. I found, when I was actually looking, fascinatingly enough, in the Malbim, who actually quotes this, He actually has a little bit of a different formulation as to how it the end of each sentence works. The way he has it at the end of every sentence is "Va'amar Hashem sheyisu l'sukos." Hashem said that they should travel to Sukkos over here. So a little bit of a different formulation. Okay, but nonetheless, so you have this interesting formulations in Aramaic, travel options and final destinations. What's going on over here? This is an ancient segula, it's brought down in a number of old svarim. Talked about what does it mean? Why is it helpful? What can we learn from this? And again, with the idea in mind of not just trying to find something which will make one ritualistically feel satiated, but actually something which one can contemplate on and one can think about. So obviously, when one thinks about this, one is obviously going back to a particular parasha in the Torah, and that parasha is called Mas'eh. You go to the last parasha in the book of Devarim, in the book of Bamidbar. We're told about Ma'aseh B'nei Yisrael, the journeys of the children of Israel. Asher Yotzu Meretz Mitzrayim Netzivo Esam B'yad Moshe V'Aron. We're told, Vayichtov Moshe Es Motzo'ehem L'Ma'aseihem Al Pi Hashem Ve'elu Ma'aseihem L'Motzo'ehem. So we're told about the way that they journey. And there's a whole long list. And in fact, for those who are of Yekish descent, you'll know that in fact there's a special tune, there's a special trop that is used to actually read these journeys in this in the Torah as well. So it has its own unique way of being read. So let's try to understand what's going on here, because it's true. If you read the list of these journeys, these way stations, there's 42 of them in the Torah. Still doesn't explain fully what's going on in this segula, because this segula does not present them as a linear journey, as sort of A to B to C. It presents it as A and then options almost G, J, and K as options, and then it goes to B. And then at B it presents, right, so there's numerous options as to where to go. Where does that come from? What's this whole point, the point of this in the first place? We could really ask ourselves, what's the point of the Ma'aseh in the first place? Why does the Torah see it fit to give us a regrouping of this entire process? So I'd like to start off simply and then perhaps expand it a little bit more in a more complex fashion. Let's start off on a simple level. So here we go. We are told the Rambam at the end of Mor Nevuchim, the very, very end of the third volume, this is literally two, three chapters from the end of the entire work of his Guide to the Complex, is somewhat concerned about the following issue. And he says that there are people who claim that the Torah includes unnecessary details. The Torah, you know, waxes poetic when it's unnecessary. And the Rambam says that is incongruous, that is not a true assertion of how the Torah works. The Torah always gives necessary details. So one of the examples he uses to show you that the Torah uses necessary details when you may think it is just simply a whole list of extras is in fact the beginning of Parshas Maaseh. Here's what he says. Umakom hatzorech in source 3. Umakom hatzorech elav gadol ma'od. We need these journeys very significantly. Mibnei shekol ha'mofsim, because all the signs and the wonders, enom amitiim rak limi shira'am. This is true about any experience. Anybody who goes through something, whether it be miraculous, less miraculous, difficult, less difficult, it's real to the person who goes through it. Ach, la'asid, in the future, yashuv zichram sipur, then in the future, the people who are no longer the first people who are experiencing it, it turns to them as a story. And because it's now, we'll call it second generation, because it's now no longer eyewitness account, anybody listening can say, yeah, right, I mean, it probably wasn't exactly like you said. There's no such thing as a sign or a wonder which is intergenerational to the degree that everybody's experiencing it in the same way. And if we read about what went on during the desert, and he gives examples, Amod Yisrael Bamidbar, Arboim Shana, Bimotsema Boy Haman, Bokol Yom, and the fact that they were sustained on a daily basis, And he says, "Hamidbarahu kamoish zachara kosov nachash saraf akrav tzimon asher en mayim." We're not talking about, you know, a desert wonderland. We're talking about snakes, scorpions, dryness without any form of precipitation. And this is a place where there's no fields, there's no natural fruit or vegetation. This is not a place that's just plotted out and there's pathways. You never had the opportunity of regular food. These are all, the fact that they survived this is remarkable. These are supernatural. When God knew, they'd just give it a generation or two, and people would start publishing, you know, works saying, you know, desert denial. Did the Jews really go through the desert? Was the desert really a desert? When people would start, there'd be a whole new boon in literature about this particular topic. They said, they were on the outskirts of the village. That's where they were. They were playing desert. They were like Bedouins. They had a tourist industry. Right? They were serving tourists tea and taking them on camel rides. They weren't in the desert, really. You know where they were? They were in Jordan, just next to the river. And it looks like it's the desert if you take the backdrop picture. So therefore, says the Rambam, the reason why the Torah went to such lengths to tell us about all these way stations was to emphasize the fact that there's no way to recreate this. There's no way to reshape this event with the historical revisionism. And that's what the Rambam says is important. So as we read these stories, as we read these way stations, the Rambam tells us the significance is to remember is that it wasn't so easy. It's to remember the difficulty of that experience. That's the way the Rambam understands it. Very powerful and very true today. We can think in our lives, many situations which during the course of their experience or their development were astonishing and were remarkable. And later on, unfortunately, people forget about them unless in fact they are somehow maintained for posterity. This is what the Moreh Nevuchim says. Rashi famously says a little bit of a different perspective. He quotes Rabbi Tanchuma, who's the author of a Medrash, who says, he gives the following. This is a very famous thing that we know, Rashi tells us, is why do we need to hear about these way stations? He says, Mashal l'melech, so let's say you have a king whose son, God forbid, gets sick, and he has to take him to a faraway land to heal him. So then on the way back, the father starts counting all the places they stopped. He said to him, Kan yoshavnu, kan hokarnu, kan chashashta es roshcha. And he says, you know, here you caught a cold, here you had a headache. And he goes through all the places and all the experiences that son went through. And there was a wild animal here, and we sheltered there, and we slept there, and we set up a makeshift tent over there. And he goes through all the different experiences retrospectively that the son had gone through. So what's the point of this, according to Rabbi Tanchuma, and this is the version that Rashi is quoting for us over here, is it seems that now post facto, at the end of the desert experience, the Parshas Maaseh, which is the end of the 40 years in the desert, what it sounds like Hashem is saying is, B'nai Yisrael, remember all the times when we were on the way and it was difficult and it wasn't so simple. And remember, but nonetheless, we came through and this and that and all the little anecdotes along the way which contributed to getting to the final destination. Why is he doing this now? Why is this significant? So it's just interesting is that Rav Asher Weiss just recently actually came out with a book on Emuna and Bitachon, which I spent some time reading this last week, which is just very beautifully written. And he points out that if you think about this mashal over here, is that sometimes in a certain sense what's being said over here is that the actual stages of the journey itself are what arrives at the destination, which means to say that if you're to ask the child who's on this trip and is probably on a wagon at night and it's cold and it's difficult and there's moments of fear and he doesn't think he's going to make it, nonetheless, what the father's pointing out is that all of those steps and stages were necessary components of that journey to get to the Geula itself. All the difficult steps along the way were contributing towards that journey itself, even though you thought that perhaps they were in the way or there were delays from arriving at the destination. Which means if you think what essentially the Torah is saying, is the Torah is saying that retrospectively, all of those steps along your journey, B'nai Israel, were the necessary places to get to the Geula. We could not have got to the Geula were it lacking one of each of those 42 way stations. The Baal Shem Tov, in fact, says that these 42 journeys aren't so much necessarily just about the nation of Israel in the desert, but in fact, they are the journeys in every person's life. Every person has journeys through their lives, and sometimes they seem like detours, and sometimes they seem like disappointments, and sometimes they feel very painful. But at the end, what happens is that the Father takes us along and says, do you remember over there? Well, that was necessary to get to the next step. And you remember over there? That was necessary to get to the next step. And slowly but surely, the Father, our Father, shows us that these are the necessary steps in our lives to arrive at our destination. And that's what Rashi seems to be saying over here, which is a very powerful and very beautiful idea, not just about Israel, but about every individual and their path and their journey through this. And the reason this is significant is because it's important to understand, now coming back to the segula which was described beforehand, this segula of Rav Shimshon of Astropoli. If you look at it, actually, this is described, it's fascinating. There's a number of people who try to explain this. The Shvilei Pinchas, Rav Pinchas Friedman, has a very beautiful essay on this in Parshas Maaseh. And he points out, and this is just, it's available for anybody to see, is that if you look actually in the Malbim himself, on the Torah, the Malbim actually quotes this segula, and he explains that he comes to the arrives at the suggestion as to what's going on, and I think it's a very profound suggestion. Let's remind ourselves that there's this Aramaic formulation about these journeys, and at every journey, there's a presentation of the number of options that the person has, or B'nai Israel had, in each of these journeys. They didn't know where they were going, and then the Hashem decides that they're going to go to one of those destinations. So what's going on here? Why? What is this whole business about? So perhaps it's easy to actually understand, perhaps more visually, and that is the following, is that Kabbalistically speaking, there are 42 way stations in this journey, but there is also 42 letters in one of the longer names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the longer names of Hashem. That actually relates to one of the prayers we say on a Friday night in the Kabbalah Shabbos, which is we call Ana B'Koach, which has 42 words. And it relates to the idea of the formulation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name in this world. Now, if you look at this is a visual formulation here, which places a number of, essentially, three sets of ideas into one matrix. And the one is the letters in this matrix are, in fact, the names, that are the 42 letters of the name of Hashem. It's divided into 6 by 8. Okay, so there's 6 columns and there's 8 rows. And each letter is one of the letters in this 42-letter name. Above each of the letters is one of the way stations in Maaseh, so Ramses, Sukkos, Eson, Piachiros, and below it is the word which is in Ana B'Koach, which is, as you know, is a formulation of 8 lines with 6 words each, relating to the 42 letters of Hashem's name. Now, if you look at this for a moment, you'll see a fascinating pattern which is emerging, and that is the following. When the Torah is describing these 42 stations in B'nai Israel's journey, let's start at Ramses for a second, right? So Ramses is the letter Aleph in the name of Hashem. And the next option is Beis. Not Beis because it's Aleph Beis, but that actually is the next letter in the name. Now, that means to say, if you look in the rest of this 42-letter matrix, you will actually see that there are a number of Beises that are available. So the second one is Sukkos, which is the natural second. But there's also, if you go a little further down, is Kelasa, which is over here in this column over here. And there's also Moiseros, which is this base over here. So what the formulation of the Segula is that when B'nai Yisrael were in Ramses, the next necessary way station was a base in the name of Hashem. But there was a degree of, we'll call it lack of clarity as to whether that would be Sukkos, Kelasa, or Moiseros. And Hashem then said, you should go to Sukkos. When they arrived at Sukkos, the next letter in the name is a Gimel, but you'll see it could be Eson, But there are other gimels available as well. For instance, there is Chatzeros, which is another gimel in the name of Hashem. And there's also Etzion Gover, which is corresponding to the letter in Hashem's name. Which means to say that the formulation of the Segula of Rav Shimshon of Astropoli is essentially the lack of clarity is where in the name of Hashem you're going to be traveling to, corresponding to the way station that relates to that specific letter in the name of Hashem. Fascinating. And that's what's being described here. Now let's think about this for a moment just to appreciate this. Going back to, we just looked at this from the perspective of the Moreh Nevuchim. The Moreh Nevuchim of the idea of being able to understand the significance of their journey in the desert. And Rashi quoting Rabbi Tanhuma, who said this was the idea of looking retrospectively back at the necessary steps to arriving at redemption. But if you think about this on a more profound level, for just for a moment, just to take those ideas one step further, the way that perhaps I'm processing this is that, you know, over the course of the last week, for me, just has been it's been a thoughtful process, is when one's in a stage, and it's an amazing experience in the 21st century to be living in a space of uncertainty. We love predictability. We love the ability to be able to say exactly where we are and what we're doing and how we're going. We like to be able to predict when the snow is going to start exactly, how many inches will accumulate, and when it will finish. We like to know that even when we get sick, how it's going to work, and what's going to be next, and how it's going to work out. And all of that has disappeared in the last year. Predictability, expectation, reliability has been taken away from us. And it's been fascinating to be able to embrace, all of us in our own ways, to embrace the uncertainty, to embrace the lack of clarity and the lack of predictability of our lives. And one of the fascinating things, and for the many people in our shul who've been through this, and Baruch Hashem, most who are healthy, who have gone through this, there's no way to know. You just don't know. Is today going to be a better day? Is it going to be a worse day? You're going to feel better? You're going to feel worse? There's a lot of fear which is involved in this. And over the course of the week, it to me was a journey of realizing that the only consistent aspect in our lives which we can rely on is in fact Hashem. Meaning, we spend so much time, we're such a sophisticated people. We love complex thoughts in Torah, and we like complex realities and ideas, and we're sophisticated. And to a certain degree, this is also about a lack of sophistication. It's about being able to say, you know, I actually don't know. I really don't know. I'm willing to embrace the uncertainty. I'm willing to embrace the fact that when I'm in one station, I just don't know if it's going to lead to another station much further on or much closer by. I don't know where it's going. And it's particularly in that lack of certainty that one realizes that each of those options which exist are still part of the name of Hashem. To me, the experience of this segula, which I felt very comforting, was knowing that even if there's an acceleration or a deceleration, if there's a detour or if there's a direct access, it's all part of the name of Hashem. And Hashem does have a plan as to how it's going to work out, which sometimes we simply cannot access. And to me, this was something which was very profound. I think that many times during our lives, and many ways along our 42 stops during the journeys in our lives, we think we have a map, we think we have a destination, and yet there's perhaps another plan afoot. There's another direction. And it's embracing the fact that one is with one's parents, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that allows one to actually enjoy each of those stations, even though they may be unanticipated. To me, this was part of the growth through this, the growth through this experience. And I think it was a big chizuk for me to think about this, and I hope this is something that I continue to think about. In fact, the Malbim goes on to say, just to close this particular thought, the Malbim actually explains that this is not just about Israel in the desert, and it's not even just about individuals through their lives. He says, "Mipnei sheze romez gama mashiyeh kodem ha-geula ha-asida." This is also a roadmap for Jewish history as well. Dichsiv avesi eschem al midbar ha-amim, uksiv alich. שכבר ביארנו בפירושנו שכיוון על היועסם בגולה מרוחקים מכל כיתוס אנשים מטולטלים ממקום למקום ונעדרי כל פרנסה ולא יהיו להם לא יסדו יסקרבים ולא מקנה בודדים לבדם כיושים בארץ ציה. He said Israel is going to be like in the desert of nations, in the desert of history. It's the metaphoric desert of the experience of Jewish history. בוודא יש ייחוס שימור למדבריות אלה שהם הגליוס וטלטולם וכל מקריהם אל מעשיהם במדבר. And these stations are like the stations of Israel throughout Jewish history, sometimes in the darkest of corners. As they arrive at their destination, we should be able to see that hopefully we're very far along these journeys, and we should arrive at the final destination on the banks of Israel, in the Arvos Moav, soon. This is idea number one, just an idea to process, and I thank very much the person who gave me this segula and this opportunity to reflect and think about this very beautiful, beautiful idea. This is idea number one. Idea number two, and I'm going to do this a little quicker, is actually an idea which I had the privilege of studying with a few people I see who are in this room a couple of weeks ago on Shabbos. On Shabbos afternoon, at half an hour before Mincha, at a very frigid hour in the afternoon, we had the opportunity of learning the Torah of Rav Kook. And just a couple of weeks ago, there was a Torah that we learned, a Ma'amar we learned together, which actually helped me get through this last little while and think about this from this perspective. Sometimes you get the refuah, the idea, or the so to speak, the healing before the makah. And this is before I had the makah, and so I appreciate this teaching even more profoundly. I thank those who were there with me. So let's start. The Gemara tells us in Brachos, on Daf Ches and Aleph, that there are certain things that a person should really daven for. Now, of course, you should daven for everything. But what is exceedingly important, Davin? For the Gemara gives us a few examples. The Gemara says, "Al zois yispalel kol chasid elechol es mitzvah." At a time of being found or at a time of need, a person should daven for these things. For this, what's this? Rabbi Chanina says, "Es mitzvah zo isha shenema matzah isha matzah tov." Rabbi Chanina says it's for a spouse, that a person should be davening for a spouse, because that's a, as the Gemara goes on to explain, is a decision which impacts the rest of one's entire life. Okay. The Gemara goes on and gives another few examples of what La'es Mitzvah is, of its critical moments in life to daven for. And the Gemara gives two other examples. Rabbi Yochanan Amar La'es Mitzvah Zu Kuvura. So the person should daven for finding a respectful burial plot. Okay, that's one very important point. The person should daven for a respectful burial plot. And Mar Zutra Amar La'es Mitzvah Zu Beis HaKisei. That a person should daven for the Beis HaKisei. Beis HaKisei is a euphemism in the Gemara, which literally means the house of the chair, and obviously it refers to the bathroom. And a person should daven for a good bathroom. Now, in the Sansino edition of the Talmud here, the explanation offered is, as most places do not have a sewage system, one was forced to relieve himself outside the city because of this unpleasantness. Finding a suitable location was called by Marzutra a time of finding. Meaning, you know, we take it for you know, we complain if the toilet gets blocked up, but we have a house, we have a room within our house which has plumbing, we can use as a bathroom. Let's not take it for granted how it used to work not too long ago, whether it be an outhouse or even more complex than that. And so Rizutra said one should daven for a Beis HaKisei. And Amr b'marava ha de marzutra adifam yikolo. Marzutra's comment about the bathroom is more important than the rest of them. Fascinating, fascinating suggestion. So what I'd like to do is just to focus on these two last suggestions. There are a number of others. We're not going to focus on them right now. But the idea of a kura and a Beis HaKisei. The idea of davening for a good burial plot and for a Beis HaKisei. And to perhaps look at these in contrast with one another. So let's take a look at this. So this is the words of Rav Kook, and just a very, very profound idea. Rav Kook is writing this about 125 years ago in Zaimel, in Lithuania. He's a Rav of a young community at this point in time. This is before he becomes the Rav of a much larger community in Boisk, and then later on to go over to the land of Israel to be the chief rabbi of Yafo and the settlements. So this is an earlier stage in his career. He's devoting it to writing. He's devoting it to his thoughts. And one of the reasons he writes this work called Olas Re'iyah on the Gemaras is actually as a response to the Musar movement, where he believes that a lot of the personal growth that's gained through the Gemara can be gained through the Gemara itself on the actual page. And this is what he suggests over here. He says, Nira de Rabbi Yochanan lomad oisano, or limeid oisano, shelevada tachlis shel hanocham apnimi, shiroilo sum el lev liois lemerkaz, shal yodo yichavein or chosov magal yashar. Ra'ui gam kein etzaref mashia niach loi shem tov ba'olam. Why is Rabbi Yochanan focusing on a burial plot? He says it's because what he's asking you to do is think, what kind of life will you lead which will leave you a shem tov in the world, a good name? What are you going to do on this planet that will allow you to have a name which is worth remembering? V'yiyeh ruach abrios noicho hemenu, that people will enjoy being around you. Ad shiyikover b'chavod v'hod, to the degree that when you will be buried, you'll be buried with honor. Not because your currency in life is because you like honor and you like people standing up for you and you like people holding your coat. And no, that's not because that's the life you lead. Rather, it's your memory is alive in the generation to come, and your pathways that you set out, that you broke through, will be something which others will follow along. And therefore, when a person dies after leading such a life, they will be considered alive. So therefore, says Rav Kook, what does it mean that you daven for a good burial? It doesn't mean to say what kind of wood the casket's made from. It doesn't mean to say what kind of care is going to be the sticker on that stone in the graveyard. What he means to say is what kind of life are you going to lead that at the end of your life, there will be such a memory of you that people will want to exemplify the type of life you led. That's what it is. It's starting with the end in mind, which actually brings me to a passage which I did quote, but I think is really worthwhile mentioning, and this is in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, in Stephen Covey, in the second habit, which is called Begin with the End in Mind. And it's a very powerful section, so I'd like to just read it in his own writing here. This, when I first read this 20 years ago, it really did have a profound impact on me, and still does today. He says, please find a place to read these next few pages where you can be alone and uninterrupted. Clear your mind of everything except what you read and what I will invite you to do. Don't worry about your schedule, your business, your family, or your friends. Just focus with me and really open your mind. In your mind's eye, you see yourself going to a funeral of a loved one. Picture yourself driving to the funeral parlor or chapel, parking the car, and getting out. As you walk inside the building, you notice the flowers, the soft organ music, I'm not sure, that detail may be negotiable. You see the faces of friends and family you pass along the way. You share the loved sorrow of losing, the joy of having known that radiates from the hearts of the people there. As you walk to the front of the room and look inside the casket, now again, not in our tradition, folks, but nonetheless, as you walk to the front of the room and look inside the casket, you suddenly come to face with yourself. This is your funeral 3 years from today. All these people have come to honor you, to express feelings of love and appreciation for your life. As you take a seat and wait for the services to begin, you look at the program at the hand. There are four speakers. The first is from your family, immediate, and also extended. Children, brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, aunts, uncles, cousins, and grandparents who have come from all over the country to attend. The second speaker is one of your friends, someone who can give a sense of who you were as a person. The third speaker is from your work or profession. And the fourth is from your church or some community organization where you've been involved in service. Now think deeply. What would you like each of these speakers to say about you and your life? What kind of husband, wife, father, or mother would you like their words to reflect? What kind of son or daughter or cousin? What kind of friend? What kind of working associate? What character would you like them to have seen in you? What contributions, what achievements would you want them to remember? Look carefully at the people around you. What difference would you like to have made in their lives? Before you read further, take a few minutes to jot down your impressions. And he goes on to work with us as a working model. He uses 3 years because that's a measurable amount of time. And he goes on to discuss if these are the types of things you'd want said about you, then surely you would like to lead a life which reflects those ends in mind. which essentially what Stephen Covey is doing is essentially what Rav Kook has explained this Gemara to mean. Rabbi Yochanan has said, what is when a person says, when the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Al Zois Yispalel Kol Chosid Eis Metzoy, what does it mean Eis Metzoy? Zukvura. Pray means say, pray for the type of funeral which reflects the values you wanted to have lived during this life. And if that's what you're praying for, it's not going to happen unless you're doing something about it. So try to think about the gadol, the bigger picture. What is it? And Stephen Covey divides it into four different quadrants of life, which is very helpful. One can think about this from one's own perspective, is what would one want to be remembered for? What type of life does one want to lead that'll add up to that? However, let's go a little further in Rav Kook now. Now we move to, we shift to the second idea as well, which was not the kvura, but the base hakise. And he says the following. Let's see. Yeah. He says, yeah. Oyomar, perhaps we could say, Shela'es metzoy eno kolel davka mikrima yoser nichbadim shem talui goral oshra. Maybe we should not focus on the bigger things which bring a person's happiness in life. Ki im ra'ui losum lev l'kola mikrim ketana ha'erech. Maybe we should focus on smaller things in life. Shekulam yelchu b'mishor kedei liyos dovekim elokova shabiyodo la'ashia b'chol eis. Rather think about the smaller things which have to line up for a person to be saved by God. Rav Marzutra says, don't think about the end of life, grandiose plans, what one aspires to be and what one perhaps aspires not to be. Kim roi listakel eich adam tzorich l'rachmei shamayim b'chol eis b'hoveh. He says, understand how the human being needs the mercy of heaven every fleeting moment in the present. Ad shegam dvarim kalei erech, even small things which you overlook, biyoser, exceedingly, yuchlu liyos monim gedolim mishlemusu amitis, can prevent you from doing anything you wanted if there were to be an impediment. Al kain pirush zeh beisa kisei, that's what he means, the bathroom. When you think about it, the bathroom, who wants to talk about that? But were it not for that to be working, there would be no wisdom, there would be no honor, there would be no life led in a more complex way if those weren't working. Al Kain, he says, im hisbonanus bedvarim agadolim, Loyazov Gamkein in an enushiusoi ubehemiosoi. Don't for a moment leave behind your humanity when you think about the grander ideas. Shem Gamkein Mesabavin Hatzlachosoi Bahashlamosom, which complete your success when they work. Says Marzutra, in order to be able to appreciate the life, in order to be able to set goals in life, one needs, I think, a little bit of both. You need kvura. When you think about the bigger plans, or one's goals are in life, because if one's not thinking about that, one's certainly not going to arrive at that. And Marzutra, which is on a day-to-day basis, just going to the bathroom, just being able to have function without pressure, without pain, without stress, because those things will actually control every element of one's waking moment if one does not have them necessarily set up. Two thoughts which to me were helpful in contemplating, one during, one before, and processing during, which I found personally helpful, and Be'ezras Hashem, I hope to continue along this journey.